Good afternoon. I'd like to call the House Resource Committee meeting to order at 1:10 p.m. We are in room 124, and today is Monday, February the 15th, 2015. Our members present are Representative Johnson, Representative Josephson, Representative Seaton, and Representative Tarr. Co-Chair Nagyak is excused today, as well as, I believe, Representative Herron. And I am Co-Chair Tallarico, and I know some of our other members will be along shortly. We had a meeting go a little long this afternoon, so they will be here shortly. And I'd like to let the record reflect that we do have a quorum to conduct business, and I'd also like to recognize our staff today. Our recording secretary is Julie Kohler. Our teleconference expert is Matt Kern. Gary Zepp from Representative Nagyak's office is here with us today and will assist folks if you need any assistance out there. And Julie Morris from my office is up here. Before we get really deep into our business, I think everyone is aware that we suffered a terrible tragedy this weekend and a loss that's felt by everyone in the building. Our hearts and thoughts go out to Representative Grunberg's family at this time. It's a very difficult situation for all of us, and the incredible multitude of friends as well that Representative Grunberg established over the years. There have been sentiments expressed. He will be incredibly deeply missed by each and every one of us, those who served with him for a long, long period of time, and those of us that just knew him for the last few years. His demeanor is something that I think we could probably all try and make a good copy of that, those of us that knew him, his demeanor, his willingness to speak to people, and his deep desire to always do what was in the best interest of the people of the state of Alaska. I think Max always told me and reminded me that he was here to help people, and that was his goal, and he did that well, and he did it with fervor. And it accomplished quite a few things. So in respect to that, if everyone wouldn't mind, I'd like to ask everyone just to rise and have a moment of silence for Representative Grunberg. Thank you very much. Thank you. So today is our first hearing on House Bill 253, which is the mining license tax. And we do have some presenters with us today. So if they could come forward, I'd like them to introduce themselves and their affiliation, and we can begin our presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Jerry Burnett. I'm the Deputy Commissioner of Department of Revenue.
And Mr. Chairman, my name is Fred Parity. I'm the Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development.
And Mr. Chair, first, thank you for hearing the bill today. And we do have Deputy Commissioner Ed Fogles from Natural Resources online, I believe, because we believe that there would probably be some questions about mining in Alaska and not just the tax itself. So,
okay. Thank you, Mr. Burnett. And just to confirm that, Mr. Fogles, are you there online?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I am. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And just to clarify that, Ed, would you mind just putting yourself on the record and your affiliation?
You bet, Mr. Chairman. This is Ed Fogles, Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Burnett. You can begin at any time.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to introduce the Mining License Tax Bill, which is House Bill 253. It's an act requiring the electronic filing of a tax return or report. And I do see that it's not on the screen behind you. I assume it's on the screen in front of you, though?
No.
It's not, so... Like, I can pause while we wait for your technologist.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman. We have a brief at ease.
Oh, I'm sorry. Brief at ease.
Okay, again, for the record, this is Jerry Burnett, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Revenue. The Mining Tax License Increase Bill, House Bill 253, is an act requiring the electronic filing of a tax return or report with the Department of Revenue, establishing a civil penalty for failure to electronically file a return or report relating to exemptions from mining license tax, relating to the mining license tax rate, and relating to mining license application renewal and fees, and providing for an effective date. History of mining taxes in Alaska. We started taxing the mines in 1913. Been restructured several times. The original mining license tax was 0.5% tax on mining net income over $5,000. It's collected on both net income from mining operations and from mining-related royalties. So the lessor of a mine, the owner of a mine, pays the mining license tax on the royalties to them as well as...
Thank you. Representative Seaton.
Thank you. I noticed the bill and its title doesn't include royalties, so is this including royalties or not including royalties?
Through the chair to Representative Seaton, the bill does nothing to change the royalties that the state collects on mining operations. Most of the large mines who are affected by this bill are not on state land. They're on federal or native corporation or other lands. They're not on state lands. There's only one large operating mine on state land that I'm aware of.
So follow up.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So this relates to net income on mining-related royalties, meaning if you are a native corporation and you receive royalties from mines, and it's going to tax the royalties, but it doesn't deal in any way with the royalties that if we have a mine on state land, that the royalties that would be paid to the state. Is that?
Through the chair to Representative Seaton, that would be correct. If the owner of property that's leased to a mining operation collects royalties, those royalties are taxed under the law.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And Mr. Burnett, you mentioned the six large mines. Would you mind identifying those mines for us?
Mr. Chair, if I could, we have a map a little bit farther along in here, so we're going to show all of those, and I think Deputy Commissioner Fogles can speak to those quite well.
Okay, thank you.
If that's okay. So this tax is primarily businesses engaged in coal and hard rock mining. Mining tax history continued here, numerous changes between 1915 and 1953, the tax rates and the tax-free net income base. 1951 adopted a 3.5-year exemption for new mining operations. And the current tax structure has been in place since 1955. So you can see the chart below that. No tax until you make at least $40,000 net income, 3% over 40, 5% over 50,000 and 7% over 100,000 under the current law.
And we might want to point out, which I'm sure everybody's probably aware of, but the history we're talking about is prior to statehood.
Yes.
Yeah.
This tax was several years before statehood and has continued in place in the same form since then. So here's the picture of the mines in Alaska, and if you have Deputy Commissioner Fogles online, if he could talk about what those mines are and which ones are going.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, again, this is Ed Fogles, Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources. Can you all hear me okay?
Yes, we can, Mr. Fogles.
Great. Okay. Well, I guess before you, on the screen, you have a map of Alaska that shows all the operating mines in Alaska. It shows the mines that are actually currently in permitting, and then it shows the significant projects that are in pre-permitting status. And I'll go through the six operating mines very briefly here for you, and I can answer more questions if the committee needs more detail. Starting at the very north, is the Red Dog Mine, which is an open pit lead and zinc mine. It's operated by Teck Alaska, and it's on Nana Corporation land. one of the world's largest producers of zinc and employs 610. That's the only taxpayer in the Northwest Arctic borough. The Fort Knox mine is an open pit gold mine located near Fairbanks on state and private lands. It's operated by Fairbanks Gold Mining, which is a subsidiary of Kinross Gold, and it employs 650 employees. It's the largest taxpayer in the Fairbanks North Star borough. This mine is actually, the state lands are actually mental health, trust lands. The Pogo mine is an underground gold mine located near Delta Junction on state land, operated by Sumitomo Metal Mining, and, employs 320. And this mine is the only hard rock mine that's on general state land in Alaska right now, the major hard rock mine on state land. Next, we have Usabelli Coal Mine, which is a sub-bituminous low-sulfur coal strip mine operated by Usabelli Coal Mine. It's a local family-owned business. It employs 150 employees, and this mine is also on state land. So, so just to sum up the land status real quick, the Pogo mine and the Usabelli are the only two major mines in Alaska on general state land. Then we go down to southeast, and the next mine is the Kensington mine, which is an underground gold mine located about 45 miles north of Juneau. It's operated by Coeur Alaska Incorporated, and it's on Forest Service lands, and it employs 320 people. And then Greens Creek is the sixth mine. It's an underground silver, zinc, lead, and gold mine located about 18 miles southwest of Juneau. It's on Forest Service and private lands, and it's operated by Hecla Greens Creek Mining Company, and it employs 415. The map also shows Nixon Fork Mine, which is an underground gold mine near McGrath. It's on BLM land. It has been in temporary cessation since 2013. It's currently being maintained and monitored. And the reason that it's in temporary cessation is low commodities prices right now. The map also shows mines in permitting, Donlin, Gold, Chewett, Nicol, and Wishbone Hill. The Wishbone Hill mine is essentially permitted. It's just waiting for the operator, which is Usabelli Coal Mine. My understanding is they're waiting for the markets to improve. And then you see the other mines in black on the map: Arctic Bornite, Livengood, Graphite One, Pebble, Palmer, Niblack, and Bokan Mountain. All those mines are ones that we're currently working with the owners of those properties and just doing pre-permitting activities on those. None of those have actually submitted formal applications for the large mine permits. That's kind of my summary. I'm available to answer questions.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Fogles, you had mentioned that Red Dog and Fort Knox were major contributors to their local municipalities as far as their tax base goes. Do these other mines contribute to the local municipal governments as well that you're aware of?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, yeah, they all do. And I think we have, I don't know if Deputy Commissioner Burnett might have provided some additional information to the committee on how each of these mines contributes to the local economies, but certainly Greens Creek and Kensington are very significant contributors to the Juneau economy, without question. And of course, Usabelli is a huge contributor to the Denali Borough and to the Healy community.
Mr. Chair, this is Jerry Burnett again. Kensington Mine and Greens Creek Mine are the top two local property taxpayers in Juneau. Usabelli, of course, is a major taxpayer for the Denali Borough, so it's approximately $100,000 a year in severance tax to the Denali Borough from Usabelli. plus, of course, the employment, the people who work there pay taxes, and there's a lot of infrastructure that's been built by, for and by these mines. Greens Creek Mine, for example, is buys excess electricity from the hydro plant here in Juneau, and so as a result of lowering the utility bills for people in Juneau. If you've read recently in the paper where people are talking about building another hydro plant here, doing zone area heating in downtown Juneau, that's only made possible by the fact that they would have Kensington Mine as their anchor client for the electricity for that. So, yes, these are incredibly important local infrastructure, local tax base, and local job economic engines.
Thank you.
To the communities where they're located.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you. On the calculation of mining net income, is that net profit, is that after corporate income tax, or is that just on expenses and revenue?
Through the chair to Representative Seaton, I may want to verify this, but I believe it is on, it is before the corporate income tax. The corporate income tax is in allocated to the company's national allocated based on their on factors to their for employment, et cetera, in Alaska to their national income. So they pay corporate income tax. They deduct this. They would this would be a deduction from their whole the whole company's corporate income tax, and then allocated back. So. The state does receive a fairly significant amount of corporate income tax from mines. I will be providing the committee with a chart that shows corporate income tax by sector for all the sectors in the economy. But yes, they do. In fact, in many years, the mines are the could be the easily the second largest sector after oil and gas for corporate income tax, depending on how commodity prices are going in that time period.
Follow up?
So following up, we have the exclusion or the base amounts that are excluded from taxation, and then the different rates. But it's on net income. So do we have any comparison of how long it takes the mines to reach net income to where they're taxable versus non-taxable because it's on it, the tax is based on net income instead of gross income or net smelter return?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, we intend to provide some of that information to the committee after this hearing. It, of course, is highly variable because, like the oil and gas industry, these people, these companies are somewhat at the mercy of commodity prices. And so it could be very profitable or it could be not so profitable in any given period of time. You know, it's a relatively large gamble, you know, when you're doing this.
Representative Josephson.
Thank you, Chairman. Deputy Commissioner. The mining-related royalties, I know that that's not directly a subject of the bill, except when we're looking at net income and the tax rate. Did the administration consider adjusting the royalty rate itself? Was that taken up?
To the chair, Representative Josephson, I think that question is probably better answered by Mr. Fogles because the Department of Natural Resources handles royalties on this, but it was not part of our proposal. Certainly people are aware of it and it was discussed, but that was not part of the proposal here, and perhaps Mr. Fogles could address that.
Can I direct that question?
Please.
Mr. Fogles, did you hear the question?
Representative Josephson, through the chair, yes, I did. The Department of Natural Resources did not propose any adjustments to the royalty structure this year at all.
Just to follow up on that?
Follow up?
traditionally the tax for oil, and I remember this in law school, I mean, it's sort of part of, the norm, is 12.5% on oil. What is it on royalty, and can you explain, after you tell me what it is, can you explain why the difference exists, unless it's 12.5%?
Representative Josephson, through the chair, no, it's mining royalties are 3%, and it's only, again, on general state lands, which right now would only apply to the Pogo mine. The royalty structure for coal is different for Usabelli, so basically there's one mine that's the hard rock mine that is paying royalties right now. That's a major mine. There are other royalties from smaller placer operators in the state, but those are probably not that significant in this discussion here because they're pretty small. And I don't know why the difference between the oil and gas and the mining royalties.
Thank you. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ed, I didn't hear the definition of what the royalty base is. Is that on net profit or net income, or is that on the gross value of the material or net smelter return, in other words, after the first wholesale value?
Yeah, Representative Seaton, through the chair, I don't have it in front of me. I believe it's definitely on net, on the net, whether it's the value or the profit. I'm not sure. I'd have to get back to the committee on that.
Mr. Chairman, I'd appreciate that because, of course, if there is a mine on state land, the royalty is our ownership portion. My understanding from the past is that the royalty was based on net profit, which means that if you are inefficient and have a very expensive operation and write off you have a lot of expenses to write off against revenue, then the people of the state of Alaska get very little or nothing from their royalty interest. So I think that's something that we may want to consider as we go forward. But I would like the answer, not today, and we're going to hear the bill in the future, but I appreciate
okay.
that.
Thank you. We'll see if we can get that.
Mr. Chair, I actually just found it, so I have it right here. The production royalty is established by Alaska Statute 3805212B, and it's 3% of net income as determined under AS 4365, the mining license tax law. So it just parallels the mining license tax.
Okay. Representative Seaton?
And Mr. Chairman, I think it's important to look at those factors. I mean, we've had mines that have been 17 years in their 20-year mine life that have been that have not broken that profitability point for the state to receive any royalty for its ownership share. And so I think that we need to look at that closely and find out whether, you know, what the actual factors are. So appreciate it. Thanks.
If the next slide is somewhat duplicative of the last one, but there's about 200 small placer mines who have an economic impact that's similar to one large mine and the five large hard rock mines and one coal mine.
Representative Hawker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jerry, quick reconciling question. Five hard rock mines here, one coal mine, that's six. 200 small placer mines, that's 206. 2015, we actually had 468 taxpayers. What's the difference?
Through the chair to Representative Hawker, we have about, I think, 500 plus companies that or taxpayers that file returns, and were 13 of them in the highest tax bracket in 2014. Had total net income, I think, somewhere around $561 million, and paid taxes on that. The balance, the next group was much smaller than that. The balance of them had total income net on their tax return of about $1 million from the after the bigger taxpayers. So when you have the different brackets, so you have a lot of very, you know, small placer gold miners, for example, that that pay very small, low tax rates. You know, maybe you're in the $40,000 to $100,000 range, or ones that are below the $40,000 range but still file a tax return because they're continue to operate, and from year to year they may be profitable to the level.
Okay, so if I may paraphrase, what I think you just told me is that while we in fact have 468 paying taxpayers in 2015, if we take the top 200 of those, the top paying 200 of that 468, we basically get a combination that aggregates approximately one large mine.
To the chair, Representative Hawker, that would be fairly correct, close to being.
Is that what the intent of this slide is?
Yes, I think so.
The guy beside you is nodding.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, it is. The intent is to show that there's big mines and there's a lot of little mines, and it takes a lot of little mines to make up a big mine. And then there's a lot of other little mines that don't make any money at all.
And here there's another 200 and round numbers, 260 some more mines, if you finish this chart out here down at the bottom, that are fairly de minimis in this whole equation.
Exactly.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And I will be sending the committee a document that shows the taxes paid and income by size, you know, within the brackets. So you'll have that. So this is what the tax proposal does. It increases the tax rate on the highest bracket of net income greater than $100,000 from 7% to 9%. Removes the 3.5-year exemption when you're for startups and requires electronic filing. Each of the bills that we've introduced for taxes this year require the electronic filing. But it does provide an exemption process, so if you can't file electronically, they'll take a paper application still. And then it adds an application and renewal fee for tax license, which is a substitute for a business license at the same rate as a standard business license. Mm-hmm. Currently, mines are exempt from requiring a business license.
And while we're on this particular slide, Mr. Burnett, that what's the actual percentage, the increase of the taxes themselves? I've been contacted by a few people, and you know, they said, well, it's a 2% increase, and I actually,
you probably think it's a 28%.
I think it's around 27 or 28%.
I think if you divide 2 by 7, I think you get 0.28 something. I could carry out the numbers, but it doesn't matter.
Okay, yeah, just so that's clear.
That is an accurate statement. It's an increase of 2%, but it's a 28% higher tax rate.
Okay, thank you. Representative Seaton, did you have a question?
Yeah, on this slide, and we're just talking about what is the efficiency of having a separate mining license that costs the same amount as the business tax and exempting them from the exemption from the business tax?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, I'm not sure that there is a particular efficiency other than the fact that these companies are paying, unlike other businesses, are paying a mining license tax anyway, and they're applying, so then you can compare this directly. But you would have the same financial effect by simply requiring mining operations to have a business license and charge them like any other business. But right now, under current law, they're exempt from a business license requirement.
Okay. And follow up. So when we discuss the bill again, maybe we could get some information on the efficiency of having two different licenses issued by two different, are they by the same agency or are they different agencies? And If it's more efficient and things go right, but if we're having two sets of people issuing the same value of license and everything, I would just like, since we're talking about efficiencies, to get that explanation.
Yeah, through the chair to Representative Seaton, thank you. And Deputy Commissioner Parity, who's with me, is with the department that issues standard business licenses. So we'll be able to talk about that.
Great, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Just if I may ask a question. Representative Hawker. Jerry, you're the Department of Revenue. I get taxes up. What is the role of Department of Commerce in this bill?
Around the business tax, Mr.
Just purely the business tax side of this?
Yes, sir.
For $50, you're here for $50?
I'm here to support this effort, Mr. Chairman. Representative.
Okay.
Okay, so
follow up.
Next question on you. This is the one slide that really kind of talks about the overall proposal on the mining tax itself. I noticed that your presentation does not go into the minerals exploration incentive credit provisions under Title 27. How do they play into the mining tax as it exists in the state today?
To the chair, Representative Hawker, I believe Ed Fogles may be able to speak to that a little better than I can. If he can't, we'll get that information back to you.
Thank you.
Representative Hawker, through the chair, the exploration incentive credit would allow a company to deduct, I believe it's up to $20 million from their tax burden once they start production, and their deductions would be based on exploration expenses that they incurred to find the deposit.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Seaton.
And I'd like to know at some point in time whether those credits are removed from costs assessing net income, or whether they're reused, those same costs are then lowering net income. At some point, Mr. Chairman, I think.
Through the chair to Representative Seaton, we'll get back to you specifically on that, but these are expenditures that are occurring in years prior to when the tax is being paid, so it would be difficult to double them up just on if you're thinking about that way. They're prior year expenditures that are credits based on.
Representative Seaton.
Okay, and then in following that point, would you please come back to us as well and let us know whether exploration costs can be rolled forward for subtraction from when development takes place, or whether this is a totally single annual expenditure and income?
Okay.
Thanks. Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Parity.
Mr. Chairman, if I might return to Representative Hawker's question, I did an abbreviated answer. In support of this bill on behalf of the administration, my presence is primarily driven by my mining background. I've mined 75 million tons of coal, 60 million tons of trona, and spent 30 years in the mining industry. So although it's not the Commerce Home Department itself, I'm here in support of the effort in this regard.
Acknowledging resident expert.
There you go. Yeah. And if I could ask a question, the 3.5 year exemption, to remove the 3.5 year exemption, my assumption is those are mostly development costs typically. And development costs are probably something that's deducted from the gross revenue. Is that part of the pack? I'm sure, operations and overhead costs are part of what's deducted from gross revenue, development costs as well, I would think, for new locations, new pits. I know Mr. Parity would understand exactly what I'm talking about there, a new location in a mine and what it costs to develop. Is that really what was covered under the exemption, were just development costs of the mine? And I guess you may not be able to answer this, but how did we ever get to a half year on an exemption?
Mr. Chair, that last part is a fairly simple one to answer. That occurred back in 1955 or so, and hasn't been revisited. The tax is paid on an annual basis, so a 3.5-year kind of awkward to handle. It would be much less awkward. So I wasn't there for the discussion. I was a little young.
I wasn't accusing you of being there, Mr. No. I understand. I wasn't there either. So.
But the as you said, development costs are deductible, you know, as part of the net income calculation. So what the expenses on the mine site for the purposes of that mine will be deducted. The 3.5-year exemption does give them additional capital or return on capital in those first few years. But since this is a net income tax, or a tax, it's not a, income isn't calculated exactly as the same as regular income, but it is a net tax, so that still would never bring them below zero profit, regardless of the size of the net profit tax.
Thank you. Representative Josephson.
Thank you. Really for Mr. Fogles, if I may.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Fogles, Andy Josephson here. When I asked you about the establishment of the royalty rate, I think you said it was designed to mirror the tax rate, but I see that our current tax rate goes up to 7%. Why wouldn't it mirror the 7% where there was net mining income over $100,000? Or, I mean, if the answer is that it was designed in the culture of the 1872 Mining Act, where there was an acceptance of very low tax rates or great incentive to mine, maybe that's the answer, that it was part of that sort of 1872 mindset.
Is he still with us? Did you hear that, Mr. Fogles?
I'm sorry, they just unmuted me just now, so I was talking and didn't realize that I was still on mute. Again, Representative Josephson through the chair, Ed Fogles here. It's not mirroring the mining license tax per se. It's just that the way you determine what is the net income is the same determination as under the mining license tax, so it really has no bearing on the 1872 law at all.
Okay. Just a quick follow-up. I thought you'd said earlier that it was designed to be analogous to the 3% rate for the $40,000 to $50,000 mining net income. You weren't that specific, but I thought you said something about... I'd asked you where the 3% came from. It's one quarter of a royalty rate for oil.
Right. Representative Josephson, the 3% is just set in statute, and the statute says that it's the 3% of net income as determined under AS 4365, which is the mining license tax. So the rate is set at 3%, but the way you determine what that net income is the same determination as you would do for the mining license tax per the statute.
Okay.
And if I could, Mr. Chair, to Representative Josephson's question, the royalty rate applies for all of the income. It is not bracketed at different incomes. So unlike the tax, which is a progressive profits tax.
Mm-hmm. Representative Hawker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just kind of on this subject, the origin of the royalty structure, somebody help me remember. Do any of you guys recall the name of the lawsuit that was filed over royalties that was ultimately settled by the establishment of this royalty structure and when that lawsuit was settled?
I don't.
All I remember is that it was when Jerry Gallagher was head of mines, but I'm trying.
Yeah.
That's a question I've got outstanding that I'm going to be trying to track down.
Okay. We'll find that for you if we can. Thank you. Okay, so relative to other taxes, most other state mining taxes are based on value or tonnage, not net income. some examples from other states. The Wyoming tax on value varies by resource. It's 2% on sand and gravel, 7% on surface coal. South Dakota, it's 10% on profits or royalties, $4 per ounce of gold, not a percentage of all, at all. Wisconsin, it's 3 to 15% progressive tax on net mining proceeds. Colorado, it's 2.25% of gross income exceeding $19 million. And we have a document which we'll be providing the committee that shows the severance taxes in all the other states. That
Representative Hocker.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. When you get to that, it would be helpful to me if we were able to see a multi-state comparison of total government take. And I think that's an important distinction here.
Yeah, through the chair to Representative Hocker, we were asked by Senate Resources to look for a government take on this, so that would be part of what we'd be looking at.
Thank you.
Okay, and we have kind of a percentage breakdown on the actual the minerals that are mined. Wyoming's has a massive amount of coal.
Mm-hmm.
I would assume a massive amount compared to metals, and so that that may tweak things. Although Mr. Parody could probably explain that better, but I think it's pretty substantial, and particularly in that particular state.
And Mr. Chair, it is fairly complex because what the government take, especially in Alaska, being largely local governments, and having to compare that, it's not easy to get all the information necessary to do that calculation. But it is, we should be able to get some estimates at least that make sense.
Okay, and just to simplify it for me, we'll have that comparison of the actual taxes. I think some don't do necessarily the net tax like we're talking about. They may just have a flat 5% across the board on what they produce, and
5 cents a ton
or a ton. Yeah, you know, yeah, yeah. So yeah, that would be great if we could get that.
We'll get that to you real quick.
Okay, thank you, Representative Seaton.
And Mr. Chairman, if we could look at the structure of royalty, I mean, it will be probably quite different in the lower 48, where subsurface rights may not hold to the state. But if there is some information where we can see what those comparisons are, that would be helpful.
Yeah, through the chair to Representative Seaton, that, again, is fairly complex because, for the most part, states don't hold mineral rights. Like as Alaska, so it's a very different situation.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Parody.
Mr. Chairman, just for the board, for the committee's consideration, whether royalty belongs in government take or not is a debatable proposition in the context that royalties are, generally speaking, a payment to ownership rather than a taxation that goes to the state itself, particularly in a state that has a land ownership pattern, either with split estate where the subsurface estate is separate from the surface estate, or whether you have the Union Pacific Railroad in Wyoming, for example, has mineral rights to 4.4 million acres of ground. That royalty rate is 5%, is 8%, where on federal sections it's 5. The difference theoretically is the difference in corporate income tax that's paid by that royalty holder. So there are a huge range of influences, whether you're speaking gross or net income, what point of valuation you're choosing, and then the combination, the roll-up of local and state. So I think we can give you the best summary possible, but it's still a very arcane subject matter.
Mm-hmm. Representative Hocker.
And thank you. And Rep. Seaton and I have got a long history with this subject. You just stated, Mr. Parody, and I completely agree with you, that royalty is usually what represents our ownership interest in the severed resource. And it is kind of unusual for it to be on a net income basis rather than as some calculus that, well, you know, when you take the resource from me, you leave me something. Does the administration have any position on the propriety of a cost recovery net profits royalty structure?
To my knowledge, no. That's an interesting element of the debate.
Was that no? What was that? That no was a no position, or that no was a no, it's not a good idea?
That no was a no position, Mr. Thank Chairman, you. Mr. Representative.
Thank you, sir.
Oh, thank you.
Actually, I was looking at you. You're the chairman.
No, yeah. Okay.
So just going forward here, the effect on large and profitable mines of this tax proposal is, since most of their income falls above the $100,000, their effective tax rate is going to go up from 7 to 9%, or real close to that. For small mining operations, there's little or no effect from the tax rate change, but removing the 3.5-year exemption may have some effect on a startup mine. Not sure how much of an effect that will have. And, you know, it'd be really cool if you have an exemption like that, if it was 3 years or 2 years or 1 year, not 3.5, because it's really hard to cut someone's annual tax in half.
So can I ask, if there are current properties that are currently being considered permitted, have begun their process, have already started the process with us, where will they fall if this moves forward in this exemption? For all intents and purposes, they started their investment with 3.5-year exemption.
Yeah.
Are they grandfathered, or does this change for them?
Mr. Chair, there is no grandfather proposal in this bill. I could understand why someone could believe that was a reasonable thing to look at, but we did not consider that in this bill. There are no large mines that are going to be expected to come online in the next 4 or 5 years, as far as I'm aware, but there are, as you know, a number of them in the permitting process and who have made large investments at this point. So.
Representative Hawker.
So, Mr. Chair, following this logic, this state has quite a history of retroactive implementation and assessment of taxes on one of our industries, and obviously we're not doing it here. I mean, is this something we really ought to consider, a retroactive implementation of, again, since the interest is really raising revenues?
Through the Chair, Representative Hawker, we've had absolutely no discussion of retroactive tax implications here, nor do I believe anyone has suggested that was a good policy under this in this case.
Thank you.
Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In the earlier slide when we were talking about Nixon Fork and it's suspended activity due to low commodity prices, you know, just trying to quickly do a scan of where things are at today in comparison to historic levels, both very recent and more traditionally. As you're trying to assess the impact here, are you also looking at commodity prices and how are you sort of judging that influence in terms of overall interest and how that might affect things going forward? I could just imagine that some of these things, if the prices increase, become less of an issue.
Yeah, through the chair to Representative Tarr, clearly, this is a net profits tax, so you're not paying taxes if you're not making money, right? So you actually have to earn a profit in order to pay a tax on this. High commodity prices, you're getting much higher taxes. Much higher taxes, you're getting much higher income.
Mm-hmm.
So it would have, where this tax has an effect is going to be on that margin in between profitability and lack of return, economic return. This, you'll always have a financial return on a balance sheet or on a profit and loss statement before you pay this tax. You may not have an economic return at low commodity prices.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where the calculus would be, the difference between a financial and an economic return on a specific project. But yes, I mean, if you look at, you know, going back a few years, there's a tremendous variation in commodity prices and their effect on this industry. If you look back to 2010, mining did not contribute any corporate income tax. They had a negative corporate income tax from the mining sector in 2010. And in 2011, it contributed over $80 million in the corporate income tax, right? And 2014, it was $15 million. So, you know, that's their world or nationwide profitability that on which that's based. So yeah, there's a tremendous variability, and it's their business plan, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So.
Representative Seaton?
Do we have a slide of those years? Or
through the chair to Representative Seaton, we'll be providing that information with a sector-by-sector comparison of corporate income tax returns.
Okay.
So.
Thank you. Representative Johnson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the three-and-a-half-year exemption, what kind of revenue is that going to generate?
Through the chair and to Representative Johnson, during the period of our fiscal note, we wouldn't expect it to generate any. I mean, we can't predict any revenue from that. So, you know, when the next mine that's in this, you know, that's a tax-paying larger mine comes on board, then you're going to receive tax for 3.5 years that you wouldn't otherwise receive. So.
Representative Johnson.
Is it conceivable that that could be the push point of not starting the mine?
To the chair, Representative Johnson, it's economically conceivable. Is it likely? I don't know. I think that would be the
follow-up.
So I guess my question is, are we putting a big roadblock up that we may not need to since we're not generating any revenue for the foreseeable future? I mean, why would we, if it turns out later we could do it, why would we include it now and run that risk when we could possibly look at this down the road?
To the chair, Representative Johnson, I think that's a reasonable discussion point as the bill moves in this committee. And it's certainly a concern that the mining industry has brought to us.
If I could, maybe editorial, maybe a question. The Nixon fork was suspended because of low commodity prices. So obviously there's a balance to not produce that's fairly fragile. And it's a big decision, takes a while to start up. And I would hate to see anything put out there that someone would look at and say, the fact that we're changing it might have that same effect. But I see this 3.5 years as being something that doesn't generate a lot of revenue and may cause more doubts and more discussion than, I mean, if it generated millions of dollars, that's one thing, but there's, it seems like we're gambling for not much.
To the chair, Representative Johnson, in the case of a large mine that's profitable at inception, this would bring in a fairly large amount of money. And do we see one on the horizon within the period of the fiscal note? No. So we can't, you know, we can't really estimate what that would be.
Thank you. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What, just a question. If we're talking about instability, if we would talk about waiting until there is a new mine on the horizon or is being developed and then take up this conversation, would you estimate that would give more pause than the companies knowing when they're going into exploration and development of what their what the tax rates are?
To the chair, Representative Seaton, I think it would. I think you're correct there.
And follow up, Mr. Chair?
Follow up.
Is the 3.5 year exemption only on the mining license tax, or is it also on the royalty?
To the chair, Representative Seaton, as far as I know, it's only on the mining license tax. If I'm incorrect, Ed Fogles can correct me.
Representative Seaton, through the chair, no, I believe that that 3.5 year exemption does not apply to the royalty.
Oh, and it sounds like there's some question, so I appreciate.
No, there's no question.
There's no question. Yeah. That doesn't apply. Yeah. Okay, great. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I do have one other
follow-up.
When we're looking at mines that have, heavy upfront expenses, and then they look at maybe having to pay the mining license tax in the first 3 years, would a deferral of taxes until they've recovered their costs so that if we had a three-year deferral of taxes, but the state would still get its money, but the that would aid in the decision making. Would that accomplish anything as far as you can see, as far as accelerating decisions on mines?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, we'll have to look at that issue. That's actually kind of how the 3.5-year exemption works in as a practical matter. Now you set the rate at what you would set the rate lower, perhaps, and not have the exemption, or set the rate higher and exempt it in the beginning, so you get quicker cash flow. I remember when I was a kid, someone told me that more was better than less, and sooner was better than later. But it's a calculus between all of those things.
Follow up. But I think that's a different, the rate and all is a different calculation than a deferral, so that we actually get the money, but that the economics of the development would stimulate the economics. So if you could look at that and come back to us on that as well.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. So revenue impact, we estimate that this would bring in an additional $6 million per year starting in FY18. That's going to be highly variable over time because of commodity prices, but $6 million is our estimate at this point. An additional $25,000 per year for the license fee and renewal. And that does not account for any changes in mining activity that may occur either as a result of this or a result of other unrelated factors.
Representative Hawker.
And thank you, Jerry. I did not take the time to look this up before I came down here. I'm just curious, would that $25,000 increment on the just basically the renewal fee, would that cover the cost of administrating this program?
Through the chair, Representative Hawker, I believe that we are estimating no additional costs for administering this program on an annual basis.
That would be incremental costs of administrating this program. Just wondering, you know, what does it cost to administrate the tax program as we sit here today? And again, we can go chase a short form down. Do you know it off the top of your head?
I don't know, and the cost of administering this program is, in fact, in our annual report of tax operations, which is posted on the web on Friday, I believe, and it shows the cost per dollar of administering each of the tax types that the Department of Revenue has and how many FTEs. So we can certainly get that information to you.
Thank you.
Representative Johnson.
While we're on the talking about the revenue, I think when the governor rolled out his plan, he said the mining tax or the license tax would generate about north of $12 million. Mm-hmm. This says five nine in 18. What's the difference? Is that cumulative, the $12 million, or what's changed, or what's the difference?
Through the chair to Representative Johnson, I believe what's changed is our expected values of mining. So this is a commodity price issue that, like other commodity industries, the commodity prices have declined over time, although gold has gone back up in value a little bit in recent days. But this is going, you know, this tax is going to be volatile based on commodity prices and activity.
Representative Hawker.
Thank you again. If we did implement this $50 fee for essentially the business, we do not currently have a business license charge. If we implemented this $50 fee, would this be continue to be administrated out of the Department of Revenue, or would it move it over to the Department of Commerce where all of our other business licenses are administrated?
To the chair, Representative Hawker, it's my understanding that the plan is to just do it along with the filing of the taxes, so it's handled at the same time as tax filings. So it would be still in the Department of Revenue.
Mr. Chair, if I may follow up. So my takeaway should be that with that additional fee, we are not incrementing the cost of providing services. You're simply adding, hopefully, a line on a tax return.
Through the chair, Representative Hawker, pretty much, yeah. I think that's a relatively simple way to look at it, yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So implementation costs, we do expect to have a one-time cost to reprogram the system, but no additional incremental costs for administering the tax program. And I always have to talk about how this fits into the rest of the of closing the budget gap, with the assumptions made in the governor's program, the Permanent Fund Protection Act, revenue from existing taxes and earning on savings come up to $4.285 billion. Spending reductions in 2017, which go up to $500 million, and some of those are in a bill in this committee, which we encourage you to work on and pass forward in your earliest convenience. And then the new revenues from new tax proposals, the mining in red there at $6 million, fishing 18, tourism 15, motor fuel 49, alcohol 40, tobacco 29, oil and gas tax increase of $100 million, and income tax to $200 million a year, which gives you new revenue of $5.242 billion.
Representative Hawker.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. Jerry, I can't let you get away with an item on page 12, please. Your spending reductions, you're characterizing the reformation of the oil and gas tax credits as a spending reduction, acknowledging that those are refundable tax credits, but isn't that really a tax increase upon those that would not be receiving the benefit of those credits?
Through the chair to Representative Hawker, the refundable tax credits have been shown as a budget item in the operating budget since the inception of the refundable credits back really in 2006 or so. And so even though it's shown differently to the extent that those are a budgetary item on an annual basis, it is correct to characterize them both directions.
Mr. Chair, just allow me to say that Jerry actually did that with almost a straight face.
Next slide.
Okay, and then we have a sectional analysis of the bill, section one, which is the...
Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just before we get into the sectional, back on page 10, and I understand, you know, because there's no mining license fee right now, the idea is just to go, I guess, with the $100. Because that's the other established license fee, but
$50.
Well, and then the renewal is $50. Is that right? I think it's $100 the first year, and then $50 renewal. And at either rate, that seems fairly small, particularly on a net profits based tax system where the only revenue you might get from someone would be through this license. So, any consideration of something that was more like 2016 pricing?
Through the chair to Representative Tarr, not at this time. I believe that the discussion was to match this with any other business activity in the state, not because we're going to tax their profits, so we would just license them just like any other business.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So getting to a sectional analysis of the bill, the section one adds the tax penalty for failure to file electronically unless an exemption is received. Section 2 requires electronic submission of tax returns, license applications, and other documents. This changes the general tax statute so it would be applicable to all the taxes administered by the Department of Revenue. Provides a process to request an exemption. Section 3 removes the 3.5-year exemption for new mining operations until after production begins from the mining tax. Any persons engaged in the business of mining will need to obtain a license to obtain and file an annual mining license return. That makes sense. That one, there's something wrong in that Representative paragraph, and I'll fix it for you.
Representative Josephson, thank you. Through the chair, Mr. Barnett, the first sentence of Section 3 implies that there would be a 3.5-year exemption once production begins. But what
right.
you're doing is eliminating.
Right. Through the chair to Representative Josephson, I think someone wrote this awkwardly, and reading it, I think it needs to be rewritten to match properly what we're trying to say. Thank you. I'm sorry. Okay, Section 4 increases the highest tax rate from 7% to 9% for taxable income. That's a 2% increase or a 28% increase.
Thank you. I was going to ask you to point that out. Representative Seaton.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, the mining license tax, it's been said that you would do that same time you filed your tax return. Does that mean you're mining for a year without a license, or is there an initial license that has to be applied for, and then you do renewals with the tax return?
Through the chair, as I understand it, we would be assessing this on the first tax return after the effective date of the bill, not prior to going into business. So it would be on the first tax return after the effective date of the bill.
Follow up? And I'm just wondering whether that's totally antithetical to our business licenses, which are you have to have a business license before you're conducting business in the state. And it seems there's a mismatch here, and we're saying we're going to kind of treat them the same, but we're not.
Through the chair to Representative Seaton, what that does is it does two things. One, it delays the implementation of the business license until that time. And two, it makes it possible for us to administer this program without any additional costs to the program, because you're now waiting for the tax return to get the business license fee instead of going out and finding people or asking them to find you and do the business license tax. So yes, it pushes out the time if you do it that way, but it makes it a more efficient process to do the business license or the mining tax license fee on it.
Representative Hawker.
And thank you. How thoroughly does the Department of Revenue audit the mining license tax returns?
Through the chair, Representative Hawker, that's a question that I can get an answer to you for. This is not, other than the large taxpayers, it's not something that would be a high priority relative to, say, oil and gas or corporate income tax, but it will be. There are audits done, and there have been times in the past when taxpayers were identified as a result of activities by the department and brought into compliance. So it does happen. It's not like oil and gas where every return is audited.
Follow up.
Do I recall, is there a provision in statute that says we are supposed to be assessing the cost of whatever audit you do against the taxpayer that you're auditing?
To Chair Representative Hawker, I can't recall what that section says, so I'm not going to answer that.
Mm-hmm. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Chair. If we could carry the logic out of what Representative Seaton said, if we just did that with all business license, we could get rid of the licensing division.
Through the chair to Representative Johnson, that's a very simple task if you would like to establish a business tax on all businesses so that when at the end of it, sometime during the annual cycle, they all have to file a tax return. Right now, they don't have to file a tax return.
Still might be something to look at, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Representative Olson.
And put it on a calendar year, perhaps?
That might work.
Okay. Section 5 is the conforming language to the requirement to submit tax returns and reports electronically. And currently, the law requires that the taxpayer submit their returns to the department in Juneau. Section 6 establishes the mining license fee at $50 per year, a license renewal fee of $50 per year, and changes the due date for applications renewals from May 1 to January
1. And just clarifying on this point, your intention is that this would be assessed on the tax return regardless of whether the tax return otherwise showed no taxes due to any of the available credits or exemptions that are in the statute immediate currently?
Through the chair to Representative Hawker, that's my understanding of it.
And just being clarity, was it that currently if someone has no liability, they are not required to file a return showing, or anyone with activity must file and demonstrate whatever degree of taxable offset they may have?
Through the chair to Representative Hawker, my understanding that people engaged in a mining operation are supposed to file a tax return. So we have a number of zero and below zero returns.
Thank you.
Representative Olson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. How much does it cost you to handle a $50 transaction every year?
Through the chair to Representative Olson, I don't believe it's going to cost very much at all if it's handled electronically through the filing system and assessed with all the other applications. So it's not it should not be a anything that shows a incremental cost.
Thank you.
So Section 7's conforming language related to the repeal of the 3.5-year tax exemption. Section 8 is the applicability language to clarify that the change in Section 3 applies to all new mining operations. Section 9 is transition language, so the language repealed in Section 7 should be read as it was before the effective date while administering a tax credit to a person who began a mining operation before the effective date. And number 10 is a transitional language allowing for regulations prior to the effective date of the bill. Section 10 being the immediate effective date for the transitional language, and Section 12 being the effective date for the rest of the bill, including the tax rate change. And that's the end of my presentation. And I think we owe the committee a few documents and information, which we'll be working on and getting to you as soon as we can.
Mm-hmm. Representative Seaton and then Representative Tarr.
Thank you. On a business license, probably for commerce, but what's the purpose and what are the implications on a business license? Does that mean that you're required to have personnel withholdings or workers' comp or any of those things? Is there any implication to having a business license versus not having a business license other than just the fee?
Mr. Chairman, I will need to get a deeper answer to that question. We have roughly 67,000 business licenses in our CBPL group, and I'll have to look into that relative to workers' comp. I don't know it off the top of my head.
Follow up?
And Mr. Chairman, I'm just trying to understand the mining license and how that corresponds with the business license and the implications of having a business license and not having a business license. And so thank you. I appreciate it when we get the answer back.
Representative Tarr and then Representative Josephson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Back to the issue of commodity prices. When you bring us back some more detailed information, I'd just like to see anticipated revenue along, you know, if there was some changes, you know, 25-30% increase in some commodity price, probably gold would be the most relevant, but be interesting just to see some anticipated revenues along a range of commodity prices.
Yeah, through the chair to Representative Tarr, I think we can do some of that, and I believe the highest value minerals here in Alaska might be zinc or some other non-gold. Mm-hmm. Even though we think of gold as being valuable, it doesn't have the volumes that some of the others do.
Well, and just in terms of, Mr. Chairman, you know, what we have the most activity, what mineral resource we have the most activity.
Representative Josephson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess for both gentlemen, what I'm wondering is, and I asked Mr. Bob Leffler about this when he came to present. He's given the same presentation around the state about the impact of mining, tourism, and fisheries on our revenue. The 28% increase, or 2 percentage points, I'm still curious about the derivation of that, because you know, I was privileged to tour the Fort Knox mine. It's a massive, obviously, capital expenditure investment. From the amateur's eye, it looks like it's more costly than oil and gas, but I don't. That's just me walking around, sort of assuming that that's true. I don't know that it's true. Anecdotally, the environmental sort of residual risk, purely anecdotally, is greater than oil and gas. I could be utterly wrong about that. We know from our legacy wells that there's environmental risk there that continues. I'm just wondering where you came up with 2%. Why not 1%? Why not 13%? And Mr. Leffler gave us a couple ideas of sort of leading authorities to look at so that we can compare jurisdictions. But can you comment on that?
To the Chair, Representative Joseph, I can't comment directly on that specific number at this point, but we can give you the information that we use to make those decisions.
Okay, that'd be great. Yeah, so.
Representative Seaton?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can you go back to the slide which has Section 9 on it? I'm trying to understand this slide. So I know the 3.5-year transition language would apply while administering a certain tax credit. Now, are we talking about the mining, the exploration, the $20 million carry forward, and how long does that get carried into a project, or what?
Through the chair to Representative Seaton, I'll have to get back to you on the specifics of that, but what we want to do is make sure that we don't change the rules retroactively in this particular case, so that it's read the same as it was before.
Sure. Thank you. And, Mr. Chair, I'm just trying to figure out how far in the future this could apply. I mean,
right. Does
that mean that any mining claim that's out there, would apply to any mining claim, even if they don't start production in the next 3 years or 5 years or what? So I just don't understand the parameters of that section. So I appreciate getting the answer back. Thanks.
So I guess to dovetail off Representative Seaton's question is the idea of clarifying what a mining operation is, or what I think what you've said in the bill is mining production.
Okay.
So that would
the difference between production and operation, is that what you're?
Yeah, or really the clear definition of production. Mm-hmm. I think would probably clarify that for us. Okay. Representative Tarr?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And with my request, I'm just thinking, based on your comments, it'd be good to have the relative volumes, I guess, of extraction on an annual basis, so we can sort of think about how the price relates to that. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Representative Hawker?
And thank you. And, Chair, just a question on, again, I'm going to present, as we've been sitting in this committee, we've been hearing that, you know, most of these increased, you know, taxes were, which are, and I frankly am going to acknowledge, are really something we seriously have to consider looking at our current fiscal situation. What I see here is you were looking at increasing taxes across the board, basically, on the production of minerals. Have you thought about reducing or compromising the major tax credits that are taken and available against this? And I think one of the first ones that comes to mind is the education tax credit.
To the chair, Representative Hawker, we have not done any serious consideration of removing the education tax credit. That's something that certainly is worthy of discussion, since the education tax credit is available on all, just about all the forms of taxation that are out there for business taxation. So yeah. It does have an effect at times.
And editorially, you know, I've been I think I see several faces at this table who were here as we both, I think the education credit on mining actually expired in 2013. We reauthorized it through like 2021. And it's something that we have done when times are like particularly good. And we, you know, it's kind of like there was never going to be an end to the money in the state. It's something I'd ask you to think about as we try to apply, make these tough decisions, but achieve a parity amongst taxpayers in the state of Alaska and beneficiaries.
Any other questions from the committee for these gentlemen? Representative Seaton?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a comment with Representative Hawker. I think I recall that we were specifically looking at a mining program that wanted to have the tax credits go up to $10 million because there was an initiative to do a certain mining school product. And I think that we did that, and like Representative Hawker said, times were good. We had money. We wanted to stimulate things. But the question is, in our current fiscal situation, can we still afford to have those credits hanging out on the books, even if they are being used? But, of course, tax credits are, education tax credits are a taxpayer redirection of their taxes that they would be paying to the state to another institution. And whether we need to look at some limitation on that redirecting taxes away from the general fund at the taxpayer's behest is something I think that we should be looking at, across all the things, and especially since we last worked on a bill to do this based on mining tax and mining tax operations to stimulate those jobs, or the people would be qualified to get jobs. We still need to make sure that we are in that kind of situation. So I appreciate that part of the discussion and the department coming back to us with some ideas.
Just a point of clarity.
Rep. Hopper.
I think in that 2010 increase that was made, it moved the education tax credit up from $150,000 annually to $5 million, mm-hmm. Not $10 million. Yeah. But anyway, your memory is actually almost better than mine, and I, frankly, looked that up earlier, so I had that number on the tip of my tongue.
Well, I think, Mr. Chairman,
yes.
I think I remember that $10 million was actually put forward on the table at the time of the discussions, and it was settled on $5 million as being the upper amount. So, but anyway, appreciate that. Thanks.
Thank you very
Thanks
much.
Thanks for the clarity.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions from the committee for these gentlemen?
Well, thank you very much. I'd like to speak to you after the meeting, just briefly, if I could. So, if you can stick around.
For just thank you very much for hearing the bill.
Thank you. Is there any other business before the committee? I'll tell you that our next hearing is scheduled for Wednesday, February 17th, 1 o'clock, right here in this room, 124, with a continuation of HB 253, the mining taxes. And if there is no more, Representative Olson.
Are you scheduling a Saturday meeting?
Not currently. No, sir. I'm not.
Could I ask
you? We're not either.
Okay.
Just a housekeeping question. Is it the plan of the chair to continue to sort of push with both 247 and this bill concurrently, or what kind of thing can we expect?
Actually, currently, because of a personal situation, our other co-chair isn't available right now, and he really does the oil and gas. So what I am hoping to do is work on those other bills that are in front of us until he gets an opportunity to get back and we can give him a full update. And so that's kind of my plan at this point. So, okay. Well, if we have no other business before us, we will adjourn at 2:35. We are adjourned.